Welcome to the Pain to Power podcast, where we have engaging, informed, and interesting conversations on topics including women's health, the menstrual cycle, chronic pain, trauma, the nervous system, relationships, and feminism. I'm Lisa Dion. I'm a women's health coach, facilitator, and educator, supporting you on your journey of healing, recovery, and moving into a place of personal power in your body and in your life. Hi everyone, and welcome to episode 34 of From Pain to Power. And today I have another very special guest with me. I have Orna Murray with me, and today we're going to be talking about her career, her interests, her personal journey with exercise and movement, as well as her relationship with menstrual cycle awareness and how that informs her passion as an athlete and her professional work, which we're going to be talking about. So I'd love to read her bio as well, because it's really, really interesting. And I think it'll set the pace and the tone for our conversation together. So Orna Murray completed her BA in applied psychology before completing her MSc in health psychology in NUIG in Galway here in Ireland. She started her journey into the world of social entrepreneurship, setting up Move to Be with her sister Niamh at the beginning of 2020. This was after some interesting professional and personal experiences, including moving to America on an athletics scholarship and representing Ireland in athletics at an international level. She has also worked as part of a sports science team with elite and Olympic athletes. Orna is also a 500-hour yoga teacher and NLP practitioner. She really wanted to do something to support the next generation of Irish women so they can access the formative learning environments and experiences that sport and physical activity provide. So I really loved reading that intro to you, Orna, and you're so welcome. It's so good to have you here. How are you doing?
Hi, Lisa. Absolutely delighted to be here. I'm doing really, really well. I think it's good to acknowledge, so our listeners know, that myself and Lisa are currently on totally different time zones. So when we're recording this, it's evening time for Lisa in Ireland, and I'm currently in New Zealand. So it's my morning time, which is always fun. So yeah, I am just so delighted to be here. And yeah, really looking forward to our conversation.
So good to have you, Orna. It's so fun chatting to you while you're in New Zealand. And yeah, she's on a, well, I don't even want to say year abroad because we don't know how long it's going to be, but you're on a work abroad stint, if you will. It's a big, big change in your life. And we actually have known each other for a couple of years. I think we met in 2019 down in Yall in Water. Yes. Is that Cork or Waterford? That's technically Cork, isn't it?
Technically Cork. Yeah, just on the border. Yeah.
On the border, yeah, in the southern part of Ireland. At a menstrual cycle awareness workshop with a woman I was co-facilitating with, whose name is Eilish Vaughan. And we did some work together, and then we've known each other since and followed each other's work and did some coaching as well. You've attended some workshops with me. So it's just been a lovely unfolding journey, hasn't it?
It's been such a happy surprise, all of it. I remember it was my cousin who lives in Yall who sent me on the workshop link. And I would have come from a very, very academic, very driven background. And I was like, what's this person got to teach me? You know, I had a little bit of sass, a little bit of energy about it. Because obviously you have a very like holistic approach, which was something I was keen to know more on. So I'd obviously started doing a lot of yoga at that point. And I was like, okay, even if I'm resistant to something, maybe that's because I need, that's exactly what I need. So I came, and it really changed my approach to menstruation, to how we integrate learning. And I suppose how, if you're only working with like academic research, you're kind of missing a lot of the picture. You know, it's kind of only just half the story. And I think when we met, it was the perfect time because you have this beautifully integrative approach that combines both. And that's the first time that I'd seen that in real life. So based in science, but also based in an embodied experience, which was really cool. So ever since then, I was like, Lisa's my woman.
Oh, I love that, Orna. And I remember your energy was so, you were so enthusiastic in that workshop, and you asked difficult questions, you know, you challenged me in Eilish, you know, and I love that feisty energy. We were both like, oh, this is super. Like, you got us talking and looking at our, you know, looking at the stuff we were talking about and questioning. And it was a really, really good workshop with a lot of different personalities in the room. And it was actually, I think, one of the last workshops I did in person before
the pandemic.
COVID. Yeah.
And I remember it being so powerful. That group was because I could hear other women's stories. And I think for me, that's when I started to realize that, you know, we can do this work alone, but when we're together, it can really have a beautiful rippling effect, because you can see yourself mirrored in the other women's experience. So for me, hearing, I think there might have been 10 of us there, like 9 other stories, was very reaffirmative, even for my own nervous system stepping into that space. I actually remember at the time hearing you answer those questions being like, oh, she knows, because I thought I knew. And then when you just came up with all this beautiful even approach to it, I was like, wow. So kind of from that day on, I've really opened myself up to this type of integrative slower approached work.
Interesting. That's really interesting, Ornak. We haven't actually talked about that in much detail, have we? Like our backgrounds. And I know I'm familiar with your background, but I would have like a similar kind of similar upbringing in a different way to you, in that I also come from a very driven academic oriented background as well, you know, results oriented. Not so much sports, but I did do athletics in school and also hockey. And in Dublin, that was, you know, the culture there was very achievement oriented as well. So it's interesting, isn't it, how when we start to learn different ways of being in the world, and then at least for me, and it sounds like the same for you, is like you start to realize there is actually a need for that in yourself. It's actually hard. It takes time to integrate that, doesn't it? That slower pace.
Yeah. I think for me, I was kind of like, I had no other option. And I knew there was parts of the puzzle missing. So when you're kind of desperate, or not desperate, but you're really looking or needing something, you are more open to other things that you would have initially dismissed. Let's say, you know, we can chat about this in more detail, but I would have gone to a lot of doctors and a lot of physios and a lot of endocrinologists and really not felt like unseen, or not felt like I was fully understood or listened to, or didn't find what they were saying to me really resonated with my experience. And I think then when I started to come across and kind of dive deeper into your work, it really did land. So, and I think for those of us, and I imagine that there'll be a lot of other women listening who do have quite a tendency to drive quite hard, you know, in their careers, and for me as well, in my sporting and physical movement, there is a beautiful coming home when you can kind of just drop everything and be like, oh, maybe I can rest. Maybe I don't need to push everything all the time. And that's scary, you know, that is incredibly scary. And seeing other women modeling that behavior for me was just such a game changer. Seeing you model that behavior, I'll be more specific. Seeing you being comfortable moving slowly allowed me to see and I remember you saying that to me one time. You were like, Orna, the most productive thing you can do today is rest. And I was just like, oh my God, because I love productivity. And I was like, okay. And I needed that help at the start. And now I can own my rest. But then it was a really nice coming home, but kind of scary one, I would say.
Thank you for sharing that. That's really, I think that is going to be really helpful for people to hear, and even helpful for me to hear back, because I'm not 100% comfortable with that either. I still, you know, that's something I have to still work on. And also, when we do start to learn this work of cycle awareness, or not even cycle awareness, but really like listening to your body and slowing down and integrating more restorative practices into your, say, like movement and exercise and your life in general. If you're so used to being in that active productivity oriented, or the fight or flight response in the nervous system, that's where we, like, our attachments are born out of that, and our sense of belonging and self-worth, especially if it's in our family and our family lineage. You know, it is very much a self-worth thing also. So when we start to let go of that, like on this kind of weird unconscious level, it feels like we're not worthy, even though your inner critic mightn't necessarily be shouting at you, but it's just, it goes so against what feels to be familiar and normal. And so of course it's going to be really uncomfortable, you know, unfortunately. Yeah. But that's how we learn, is you have to get a little bit uncomfortable to grow your comfort zone. Isn't that what they say?
Yeah. And honestly, we could probably cut the podcast there. Like, that point in itself, I could work on that for the rest of my life, probably, you know. And it's so your other listeners, like, I listen to every single podcast that comes out and I'm buzzing to be here. But there's points that, you know, sometimes I take a break from podcasts, you know, or take a break from, you know, halfway through. Like, that is so profound. For me, that took maybe a year to integrate that piece of work that's just taken us like 5 minutes to talk about. Probably took me a year to integrate into my body. Yeah.
Oh, I love that. That's such self-agency, isn't it, Orna, that you can decide, oh, I'm going to listen to this particular podcast, but I'll just listen to 10 minutes. Or, you know, I have the same thing with books. I don't put myself under pressure to read a book cover to cover. It's kind of different, though, if it's a novel. But if it's like a nonfiction book, a lot of them are written for marketing purposes and you kind of get the point halfway through, do you know? I often just read half books or just listen to the TED Talk sometimes.
Yeah. Or if it's a Tuesday with Maury, you know, you can only read a little bit of that and you got to put it down. You know, it just kind of like, it's almost a rewiring, you know, you got to let it integrate. It's like your Shavasana at the end of a yoga practice. You just, you know, if it's a big thing for you, you just got to give that space to land it in your body and in your space. You know,
exactly. Tuesdays at Maury, in fairness, what's that guy's name? Mitch Albom. Yeah. He, like, his books are fantastic. And you're right, because they are kind of medicinal for the soul, aren't they? They're spiritual books. And so to have that by your bed and read over the course of a few weeks or months, even or on your coffee table, that's a really nice idea. It's like taking your magnesium supplement once a day, not the whole tube, you know.
Yes.
So I love that. That's really, really nice, like little bite-sized pieces. I'm actually doing a course at the moment in Qigong, speaking of movement, with a woman called Maureen G. I'll put her on to you as well, Orna, because you might really like her stuff. And it's so nice. She has a course and it's instantly like my brain is like, oh, I should be working through the material every single day and learning it. But I'm actually not. I'm just doing little bite-sized pieces in the morning with my breakfast when I, you know, when I can listen to it. And it's lovely because I'm just like, I'm such a beginner at that and I'm learning, but I have access to the course, I think, for life. So there's no rush, you know.
Ah, nice. Yeah. I love that. Yeah, I love when there's not a limit on how long you can move through something. Because for me, then my productivity brain kicks off and now suddenly I've done the whole thing in 2 days. And I'm like, no, that's the point. Because the point is I just imagine for other women, like, we just rush through it, like rush through the process, rush through the healing, rush through the difficult podcast. That's actually exactly what you need, and don't let it. I know I'm going to speak for myself, and I don't let it land, you know, between all the beautiful Instagram posts that are out there that have some really amazing content. And then I'm doing some online bits and pieces, and it's, if I could even absorb like 10% of it and integrate it and maybe do what they recommend or change maybe one habit or one way of being, that would be so impactful, as opposed to moving through heaps and heaps of content.
Yeah. That's really interesting that you're saying that, because it is a challenge. And I'm in my professional training that I'm facilitating at the moment, I'm really resisting the urge to like share loads of content at people, even though it's only the first few weeks. And it's definitely like, I think I'm picking up on some collective thing there, because I think we're so used to that, aren't we? We're not actually used to that space and the integration. So
yeah.
Anyway. Oh my God, so much food for thought in the first 10 minutes. I'm very impressed.
I know. Should very we get productive. Started? It's like, what? Like, we haven't even gotten into it.
This is how Orna and I chat. It's fabulous. Fabulous. Okay. Well, I'm going to ask you about what you do, your background, and I know this is three parts, and your work in Move to Be. So wherever you feel like you want to pick up the talking stick, or not, go ahead, and I might ask you questions as you speak.
Yeah, sounds good. I will start a little bit about myself, personally and professionally, because I think that gives her a cool kind of structure as to how I ended up into this work, which none of it was planned. I will say that from the outset.
Of course.
I was always a really, really active youngster. So I always loved moving my body. I always loved physical activity. And my parents tried to get me into music and I just couldn't still sit still for long enough. But I really found myself through sport, through physical activity. And as a youngster, I was actually very competitive and quite successful very early on. I was an international squash player under 15 and under 17. Before I started running, I was like played lots of squash because there was squash courts close to my house, which is a really funny old man game that me and this other local girl, her name is Leisha Dunbar, she's a legend. We played together and we got incredibly good. And I think almost now it's only when I say it out loud that probably the friendship we had kind of encouraged us both to keep on training and to keep on turning up. So I would have started playing that around maybe like 11, and then maybe at around 13 really progressed quite quickly. And when I was maybe around 16 or 17, I started like the social opportunities within squash really thinned out, should I say. And you're kind of moving through that space where, you know, having friends and having other young like female friends is really important. So I was like, took a step back from the squash and then I took up athletics, and it was only meant to be for fun. I just wanted to, again, meet people. And there was a few girls in my school who did athletics and my parents had done a little bit of running. So I was like, I'm going to start running. And then I'd say in the
space. And how old were you at this point?
I was maybe around 17.
Okay.
Yeah, maybe 17. And then lo and behold, 12 months later, and this is actually insane now that I say it out, I was the national cross-country champion. So in that space of time, I suppose my athletic ability really came to the forefront. I was I would be quite a natural runner, and I felt at home, and it felt
amazing. Like a long distance runner, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, we would call long distance like marathons plus, and I would say I'm middle. So I do 3Ks and 5Ks, but it's not sprints. Yeah. Around that distance. And I just loved it. I loved it. It was my own. So I'm the youngest of a family of four. It was just mine. And I was so good at it. And I felt so confident in my body at a time that I knew a lot of my friends around me were kind of struggling potentially with their body image a little bit.
Oh, and in I just your felt, teenage years.
Yeah. And I felt great. And I felt I had a purpose about me. I felt I had a spring in my step. I love competition. Sorry. Some people are non-competitive. I am like uber competitive. Okay. I thrive off it. I get a good kick off it. I'm up for it. You know?
Yeah.
Like I'm at the start line and I'm so scared and I'm just like so there for it. You know? Yeah. Like the rush and the adrenaline. So this is all going really well. And then I got, like I said, like a sponsorship or a scholarship, to go to the States. But as you can, like, even when you hear this, like, a lot is happening very quickly. I had thought I'd given up competitive sports when I kind of stepped away from the squash. And then this was meant to be for fun. Or not for fun, but, you know, it wasn't something I was maybe that keen on pursuing. And I think very quickly I started thinking of, like, oh, maybe this is what I'd like to do. You know, maybe some kind of professional running, potentially look at some Olympics. Like, these were the opportunities that were ahead of me. And I was there for it. I was like, yeah, this is something I really want to do. I love it. And I also loved the status, to be honest. You know, people are like, oh, she's an athlete. And I was like, yes, I am. You know, like I loved that. And, you know, I'm okay. Like I was also working hard for it. And, you know, I felt like I had done it, you know, and I was getting a lot of self-confidence in the fact that I had made this happen. Like I used to drive myself to training. I mean, I did have my license, but you know, my parents would have if I didn't, but you know, I could drive myself to training. And it was a real, like, I learned a lot through that experience. When I went to the States, it was a very different scenario. Okay. And something that
was the scholarship to like go and study there as one of their athletes? Okay.
Yes. Yeah. So you're a student athlete. So there are certain criteria with a student athlete, like you have to pass your classes and you're meant to have one day off a week that you're not allowed to train.
Gotcha. But okay.
I would have come from, I suppose, a very non-pushy family. Okay. So they were like, do what you want. We love that you love this, but you don't have to do this. Mm. Whereas when I got to America, it was very much like people had a lot of reason for being there. Like their family was really putting a lot of pressure on them and they were putting a lot of pressure on themselves. And very quickly, so I was like 18 or 19 over there, realized that this was not an environment that gave me the freedom that running had given me before.
Wow.
So it was very much like, you're one of our athletes, so you run for us, you know? And like when you're at home, I had a lot of scope over my training. So if I didn't feel great, I wouldn't train. And having that leeway meant I always would probably train, but I didn't have to go if I didn't want to. Whereas suddenly in the States, it's very structured. There's very little wiggle room. You kind of have to stick to the set. And you go from being a big fish in a tiny pond to a tiny fish in a huge pond. And I enjoyed. So I was living in New York, so obviously that's fun. You know, you watch a lot of movies, but my actual lived experience was extremely challenging. And
you were so young as well. You were still in your early 20s, right? Or late teens?
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it wasn't amazing, I would say, but like there's so many positives to take from it. And I would say as well, like I'm an extremely highly sensitive person. I didn't have any language for this. And, you know, expression for me is super important and autonomy for me is super important. But at the time I didn't know. So I just felt very confused of why I used to love running. And then I went there and I just didn't love it. And then when you don't love something and you're getting up every day at the crack of dawn to do it every day, often twice a day, often racing on the weekends, it really quickly kind of dampens your spark. Like quite quickly, because it just never felt right. And then obviously you're not running that well because you're not loving it. So I made a decision to come back after a year, which was probably the start of me building my confidence on how good of a decision maker I was. Because at the end of the day, like people are like, oh my God, you're in America, you're on scholarship. How cool is that? And then your experience is not reflective of that. And I'm so proud that even at that age that I had the confidence to be like, this is not for me. I want to come home and I'm going to start doing something else. Again, it's only in hindsight that I can really see the bravery in that decision when it was a very hard one to make. But at this point, and unfortunately, this kind of marks a turn in the story. And, you know, I know I'm taking my time working through it, but I think it's important because it really paved the way for a lot of the work that I did. But I was also at this time like a very low body weight and hadn't menstruated since I'd left Ireland. Okay. And this is actually something that would have persisted for the next 3 to 4 years, is I didn't menstruate at all. And I was a very low body weight and training very intensely. So I came home and I started studying psychology in UCC. And again, I got a sports scholarship there. So I was training, but it was at a much more manageable pace. I actually loved UCC and I loved my running crew and I felt like I could go out and I could kind of do both. Again, that productivity and overdrive, like I had studied extremely hard for my Leaving Cert, gotten great results when I was in college, the same, studied really hard, trained really hard, really low body weight, no menstruation. And I mean, you can imagine where this is going. So I actually then started to not feel that well. So I would have gotten then a lot of stress fractures, had really low energy, underactive thyroid. And then my body essentially just started like, just kind of not shutting down, but I just would have had extremely low energy and felt very burnt out. And how old was I then? I mean, and I was so young. I was only maybe like 22 at this point and really in the midst of it. Wasn't able to train, was very upset that I wasn't able to train. And I suppose in this time was also grieving the fact that I probably wouldn't make it as a professional, and never even didn't really have the language to say that, because all the time I was like, oh, if I get back now, there's still time for me to make it. And again, this time pressure that I put on myself. I mean, I was only 22. There's loads of time. But I would have thought that, you know, if unless you make it in your early 20s, there's no room for you, you know, as a female athlete, like you have to do it when you're in college, because like, what's the supports going to be there for, you know, these are just things I never even articulated. But looking back, I put so much pressure on that I never really allowed my body recover. So even when I was training, I didn't have the confidence to recover from my training. I didn't have the confidence to rest. I didn't know it was important either.
And I suppose that's part of the, like, I know you're saying that you put pressure on yourself, but that was part of the culture and is still part of the culture in sport. Am I right?
Yeah. And it would have been very common at the time to not have your period. Okay. So it, like, I would have said it to friends and they were like, oh, I don't have mine either. And I was like, oh, perfect. Mm. And that was the end of it. So again, and fast forward a little bit, I took a step back then from running and it absolutely broke my heart. Broke my heart into like 100 million pieces because it was something that I loved and was a real part of my identity. And yeah, I very much didn't know what I was about. And it was a very much like a tool I used to navigate life. And if I was stressed, I'd go for a run. If I was sad, I'd go for a run, you know, and I used to feel great afterwards. And I suppose it gives me a great empathy for athletes, you know, like we form so much of our identities around our athleticism and our careers and our friends were all athletes. And then what happens if you get injured? What happens to so many people? You're kind of just left not really knowing. And also then all your friends are into sports and athletics. And then you kind of feel like if you're trying to take a step back, are you taking back a step back from your friends as well? And then I started yoga. Because I mean, then I started yoga. It was my sister who got me into it. And she was like, I think you need to do some yoga. And like that, I would have spent like 2 or 3 years doing yoga with Adrian. I don't know if you've done any of her stuff online.
Find what feels good. Yeah, I'm sure everyone on this podcast knows her. And the dog. What's the dog's name? Benji.
Benji. That was medicinal. That was medicinal. That was and you know, even calls you out on stuff and she's like, if you're trying to do the mostest, like ease back. And I'd be like, oh my god, I am trying to do the mostest. And I then studied health psych in Galway, so I did my master's in health psychology. And at this point, so up to this, I really thought I would have gone down the sports psychology route, but I was just so kind of annoyed and sick and cross with sports and everything that I really wanted something that was a little bit different, that was more focused on my health. And it was kind of for personal reasons, really. I had always read the health section, the health supplement. I think it's still in the Irish Times on a Tuesday. I would have read that and just been really interested, but knew I didn't want to go down the medical route. That was something I was looking at for a beat. And I think I knew that I was like, oh, I don't know if you need that kind of structured academic route of being around also lots of other high achievers studying really hard. I think I recognize that probably wouldn't be a very good environment for me. I don't really have a lot of self-control on how much work I'm going to do. I do now, but I didn't then. And yeah, like really started to understand health. And I know it's so basic, but understanding sleep, understanding nutrition, understanding stress, understanding that if I exercise too much, that can be a big stress on my body, like really understanding these things for myself in a really like basic way. But like how are our habits every day, once I started understanding this, I was like, oh my god, I understand why I got injured. You know, like I kind of didn't feel like so much. But at the time I was like, why me? Why did I get injured and none of my friends did? How come I'm not getting to be a professional athlete and my friends are? And that was I also started meditating. And I know like everyone obviously on this podcast is, but at the time that was big for me.
Yeah.
I was 23, 24 doing my master's. And I downloaded Headspace and that was it. I invested in the app. So again, I'm also a college student, so broke at the time. But that whole thing of investing in myself, so spending money on something that was for my health. And I started to do 20 minutes a day. I started to do the yoga. And then like over time, my body started to heal. I would have worked with a brilliant nutritionist who was just super practical, you know. She had no real focus on sport, which I appreciated at this time, because I will say that in the 4 or 5 years prior, I had seen multiple physios, gone for lots of scans, gotten cortisone injections, been in those space booths, been told not to run, been told to run, been aqua jogging, been swimming. I had been through the ringer. And I mean, what helped? Putting on a little bit of weight, which was not easy. And I'll be totally honest about that. I really struggled to allow myself to put on weight even though I needed to, because I was just really structured in everything. So easing back up was challenging for me. Hanging out with non-athletes who were relaxed. that was one of the key things, like learning that it was safe and okay to have fun and be chilled. that I didn't have to be the best, that I didn't have to be on top of everything. And that even if I was a bit, even if, no, I don't think I handed up an assignment late, but even if I did hand up an assignment late, that like nothing bad would happen. And I think I had really worked myself into just like a really highly, highly functioning, to my detriment, state. And then I spent then the next little while coming down and learning that like it was okay. And, you know, doing things like yoga, did a little bit of surfing, did a few triathlons. And that was because obviously I wasn't great at biking or swimming. So you were already down the field. But I was like, oh, it doesn't matter now anyway. And then I could enjoy myself. Yeah. So that was a little bit around as, so as I moved to my, kind of, I suppose, academic years, I was then starting to realize that my, the way I moved my body could also have a very healing effect, that I didn't just need to not exercise, that some movements could be quite healing. And then
that's a really important point, isn't it? That you can find rest in movement. You don't have to be lying on the couch. That, like you say, just different types of movement can be restful and fun.
Yeah. And that, it doesn't, all movement doesn't need to be intense movement. And maybe your body, even if you had like learning, learning to like not train when you need to just do a yoga, you know? Like learning that skill. I think as well, like it was challenging, but also no one around me was doing it either. So I think me and my friends were learning along the way of how to do this type of work. You know, of how to listen to our bodies, because I don't think the athletes before us had. So I think we were learning that. And now it's quite commonplace. Like now it's common for athletes to meditate. Now it's like all these things. It's like common for athletes to do yoga. But at the time, it really wasn't. You know, no one around me was doing it. And then again, like building up that that confidence and like I make really good decisions. And being like, owning that, even if it's counter to what people are doing, which kind of leads to a lot of my work. So obviously there is a lot, that is part that my work grows from, those experiences.
I just need to pause you there, Orna, because I just want to say like that is an incredible story. I haven't heard you recount that story to me in that linear way. And I was just like hanging on to every word. There's so much in that. And there's so much like self-awareness and growth and development and following this breadcrumb trail of not knowing where you're going and trusting the path and making the difficult decisions and, you know, the painful experiences, like metaphorically and actually, like literally you went through, and then all of the cultural stuff around you and the disappointments, and then navigating like being a young person as well. You know, it's, there's so much there.
I will say my mom and my sister were really amazing in this time. Like really just solid pillars, like gave it a bit of space, but also were like, just live your life and you will figure it out. And I think having people around you who just be like, oh, you'll figure it out. Like over time, I was like, oh, I will just figure it out. And it's just going to take time. So again, I think it's very healing to hang out with people whose nervous systems are regulated. So, you know, and I think it's something that, again, when you're a big doer and a big productive person, you want to do it. But sometimes it's just like you need to learn gently, slowly. Mm. And the easiest way is to just hang out with people who are just hanging out.
Exactly. And there's nothing wrong with being productive. And your productivity is one of your superpowers, you know, and your like athleticism is also one of your superpowers and your ability to go and do stuff and get things done. But then now you have that wisdom to be able to step back from that in your own interest. So you're meeting your needs as opposed to, like you said, like the needs of the university in America or cultural needs or whatever. You're just actually prioritizing you and your well-being before anything else is the main thing, isn't it?
And it's just like any strength becomes a weakness if you do it too much.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just to find that balance. But I found it so hard in the culture that I was in that bubble. Mm. To value it, because it was just, and I was getting so much social endorsement from my achievements, so much. I was like, oh my god, you're great, you're so smart, you're so this, you're so that. I was like, yes, I am, I love this. I mean, who doesn't love to hear their grades?
I love a good achievement as well, like
I love an achievement. Yes. And it's funny, I remember getting my master's in Norway and like getting to wear the hat and the gown, and I was just like, oh God, this is probably one of the easiest, like, and it was really hard, but like recovering from my injuries was 10 times harder. And I was like, huh, it's funny that like no one even knows you know, it's like, it's funny that like this is what gets celebrated, but actually the fact like my chronic pain has gone away and that I figured out a lot of stuff is like a big deal for me and like probably needs a massive celebration, you know?
Oh my God. Freaking love that. That's so good, Orna. Yeah, because you're kind of going against the status quo of like, oh, the biggest thing is the certificate. And it's actually not. Like your biggest achievement was going through all of that like stuff, the underground, you know, you were like navigating the shadow side of all of this work and the cultural stuff and everything. And like you're doing it by yourself. I know you had supports, but like there was no one telling you what to do, thankfully, you know, so like, unfortunately, you had to figure it out. And like I said, like a breadcrumb trail. I take that phrase from Alexandra Pope because she uses it a lot and I think it's so good. But that's amazing. And I love that you're able to recognize that like you're celebrating your own success for yourself during that time.
Yeah. And it's funny, like my friend quit a job recently and I was like, oh my God, congratulations to you.
Yeah.
I was like, we need to celebrate this. And it's just, again, we need to celebrate those things that almost seem counterculture because it's just like,
I'm just going to say, to the listeners on here, what are we going to say, Orna? Like, what one or two things can you celebrate that are counterculture? It might be leaving your job, like Orna says, or breaking up with someone or moving house or something.
Like, for someone, it's not exercising if you're an over-exerciser. Mm. And for someone else, it will be their celebration will be that they're brave enough to put on their runners, even when they don't feel like it. So again, your counterculture celebration is so like it could be agreeing to go to be like, I'm going to ring that counselor. That could be your counterculture celebration. Like, how brave is that? Or it could be stepping away from a job, or it could be stepping into a job. It could be stepping into a relationship. It could be saying yes to someone when you have not learned how to trust. You know, so, and for someone else, it's stepping out. So I'm very conscious, and I think I've learned a lot from this, from you, is just like, my journey is not your journey. And that, like, you know, why I'm so open about my own is like, at least it gives another narrative for, and, you know, they've known your story, and now they hear all these beautiful women's stories, and like, none of these will be you. None of these, you will have your own, but at least it will give you, you know, someone else's to compare against. And then you can be like, ooh, for Orna, it was this. But for me, it's this. And like, that's the real magic. That's why women are so cool. Like, honestly, I just love women so much. They're all so unique and our bodies are so unique. And what feels right in our bodies is so different. So it's just like the more stories we have, the more we're less like, this is right, this is wrong. You're like, oh, this is me, this is you, you know?
Oh, I'm getting so excited listening to this, Orna. It's such good, like, just thoughts and juice. Like, that whole idea of the counterculture celebration. And you're right, like, no women's stories are the same. And, like, we're so different. Even every, like, you know, with menstrual cycle awareness, we're different to ourselves every month. And we're only learning that here too, aren't we?
Yeah.
And, like, getting to know the parts of ourselves we don't like and all that stuff. And, yeah, I love that so much, the counterculture celebration. So I'm just, like, repeating that so it's going into people's heads so they can go off on their walk or wherever in their yoga practice today and think about what counterculture celebration can you make today. And for me, what's landing for me is the what you said there, the courage to put on the running shoes. That would be my counterculture celebration. I have a history not as like detailed as yours, but a little bit of a personal story with running too, which if I have time I'll share that with you at the end. But yeah, so much in that. So, okay, this was the pot out of which Move to Be grew. Yeah.
Yeah.
So tell us about the planting of the seed and the growth of this beautiful plant.
So I would have worked then in sports science, which was a beautiful change from psychology because it was very like practical and physical and a little bit just more like concrete, because sometimes psychology is a little bit like, it could be this, it could be that, this paper says this, it's really sometimes like very conflicting and not a lot of said answers. But the coolest thing I realized then is a lot of the things we use as athletes to recover at the elite level are also like lifestyle, like they prevent lifestyle diseases. So it's to do with sleep, it's to do with movement, it's to do with stress management, and it's to do with nutrition. And it's all the same. So the things that cause like things like, you know, type 2 diabetes or obesity or coronary heart conditions, a lot of the ways we can heal or those lifestyle conditions is through those four pillars. And it was cool to be in sports science and see we were working with the same four pillars. And I was like, these two worlds need to overlap. And I suppose maybe sports psych does that a little bit, but athletes are human. So it should be human psychology as opposed to sports psychology. And I suppose because I had been an athlete and then had to move through that injury and kind of grief phase about my own career, I was just like, yeah, but if we focus too much on like goal orientated stuff, we're really only building up a certain part of a person. So if we just look at the whole person, I mean, it's not groundbreaking. Let's just look at athletes and people as whole people. Not... I know. And here's the thing. My work is so simple. And it's what I try and do is just keep it so simple.
But this isn't what's happening in the world. Like even there's so many places that make it more complicated and like so many interventions that are not looking at the human. Like even if you go into like workplace consultancy and that kind of thing, one of my friends does a lot of workplace coaching and consultancy. Mm-hmm. And she's always shocked at how like the human element is always missing. And that's all her work is. It's all about bringing the human part back into the workplace because you're working with people, not robots.
Yeah.
As much as they think they are often.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah.
And that's exactly true of athletes. You know, it's just like they're just humans who are just really fit. Like they still feel every single emotion everyone else does. They don't have some other human superpower that they don't feel pain or grief. And I mean, they might just have a lot of drive. Probably like, you know. But that was where I first started coming across, I suppose, female specific physiology. And up until that point, I had never really thought about the fact that I was a woman in a really like beautiful way. You know, like I had never felt that I was any different. So I have two sisters and a brother, like to my brother, you know, I felt like, I mean, obviously I knew I used a sports bra and I obviously had, you know, I hadn't had periods and then I had had periods, but I'd never really thought about how it would affect my performance. And again, I suppose when you're looking for that last few 5%, I was like, this is pretty wild that we're not looking at this for women, you know? And when I was working in sports science, that's when I really got into that data. I suppose one of the things and why I'm not still working in sports science is I am really interested in the psychology behind it all, because it's not just a physical experience. Menstruation is not just a physical experience. It doesn't just have physical impacts. It also has psychological, it has, you know, emotional. And that's where I had, and it was in between that position and starting my own thing that I met you, Lisa. So I will just caveat, that's the timeline. So I had left that position because I loved it. But it was, I was just like, it's not all the pieces of the puzzle, you know? Would have come across you and your work, and at this time was doing lots of yoga and had been to India and had done my first yoga teacher training and had traveled a bit and had been like, you know, when there's a little thing inside you and you're kind of like scares you a bit. And I was like, oh God, I think I want to start up my own business. I was like, oh God,
shit. God. Damn it, that thought, like, I know.
Shit, you know what I mean? And I was just like, okay. And like, I remember talking to myself, I was like, you really need to mind yourself going into this. You know, I'd already burnt myself out. I was 25 when I started. And I went into it having had a lot of life experience, I think. But also, again, that learning curve was good and steep. My goodness gracious. I look back and I send myself so much compassion and love. And I'm just like, oh, wow, you were brave, weren't you? Oh dear. So that's when me and my sister, we set up Move to Be. So this is where my sister, who would have always, and we were very good friends as well, and she was working as a secondary school teacher at the time, and she was coaching an athletics team and doing a lot of work with their hockey. And she's like, Orin, and she would come to me with, I suppose, like, you know, I had a lot of experience with women and with sports psychology and just like coaching and training and sports nutrition. I just kind of like was a, and it's funny, like for anyone had a query around that, and it would kind of come my way. but it also would give me like quite a lot of understanding of the questions that people were kind of interested in knowing but didn't really have anyone. Like, it wasn't a doctor question, it wasn't a physio question, it was kind of like a physiology, emotional, kind of psychology, like, you know, it was a mix, like the questions that were kind of coming in, you know. And she was just like, oh, like this happened, or like this girl got upset after this race, she's putting a lot of pressure on herself. And I was like, oh, well, you know what that's like. And she was like, I do, I just pretended she was you and I talked to her that way, you know, as if some, you know. And she saw a lot of her youngsters drop out at around the age of maybe second or third year. And I actually remember a teacher saying to me when I was in second year, Orna, you're not going to be able to keep up these sports and study for your junior cert. You're going to have to pick one, sports or study. I was like 13 or 14. And like, you know, it was just like, I was just like, boys are not hearing that. Boys, no,
yeah.
I think it was from, I suppose, my life experiences, the love I'd had of sport, how I'd never, and I was very lucky, I never had a lot of like intense, and I know a lot of women on this podcast, you know, do experience like very painful periods, endometriosis and these conditions. I was extremely lucky that those never, like, I never had a lot of pain that stopped me from competing in sports and physical activity. But I knew there were girls in my year that it did. And I knew for Niamh and the girl she was coaching that there was. And I had an understanding and I had an awareness of that. And I was like that's around the time in my head. I was like, that's when they're getting their periods. I was like, that's puberty. And I was like, no one is helping them with that. And I was like, how come only the elite athletes who are working, you know, who have access to sports scientists are getting access to this type of information? And I think then it was more from like a moral obligation that I was like, I feel this is like highly unethical that we aren't really educating young women. And we know, well, I knew, like, physical activity is one of the best things you can do to take care of your mental well-being. It's a great way to learn how to socialize. It's a great place to build up your confidence, how to make friends, how to use your body, how to kind of come into your body as it changes. You kind of get, you relate to it through sports and physical activity. For me, I did. I mean, you're changing all the time, you know, you'll probably use a sports bra, you'll run, you might run differently, but again, you're getting to know how to use your body. And it's just like, there's a horrible stat out there, and I just, it just really freaks me out. It's like 93% of Irish teenagers are not reaching the recommended level of physical activity of young women. So it's like less than one in five are reaching the recommended levels of physical activity. And if you even look at that, like, what's the point? Like, you know, talking about prevention, it's just like, I don't know, is it worth, like, if someone's, it hasn't developed that relationship with their body, if they don't feel comfortable exercising, like, that's really helpful to counterbalance things like anxiety, things like low mood, things like, you know, figuring out friendships and peer relationships when that you're that age. I remember, like, that's how I dealt with it. And I know that's not how everyone deals with it, but it is a really helpful tool to have. And if 9 out of 10 girls don't have access to that, do you know that, I mean, it's like, for me, I was like, there's just so much opportunity there for people to feel good. And that's how I spun it. It's like, there's so much opportunity, like, literally just there to feel good. And then we started looking at, I suppose, some of the things, some of the hidden barriers that are stand in, yes, young women, but all of our way, like, as women, when we think about physical activity, things of like how we identify, you know, like, all the girls say to me, oh, I'm not sporty, yet they'll walk the dog after school, you know, or they might go to a Pilates class with their mom. And I'm like, oh my God, yeah, you are. And they're like, am I? I'm like, yeah. And then for them, now they're just totally, you can see it rewiring in their head that they're like, oh, maybe I am into physical activity. But you don't have to be into team sports, let's say. Another one is like developing breasts early, and it's just like maybe being sexualized early, like, all it needs, and I, you know, is someone to shout nice tits at someone when they're young, for them to be really, to feel really self-conscious about it. So we do a lot of work at just encouraging, you know, places to put sports bras on the kit list, and making sure that women know what is a sports bra, and it's not the ones you buy in Pennies, and supporting girls to go home and say to their moms that they need to buy the expensive sports bras.
Yeah.
And it's as simple as that. It's like, you spend how much money on your runners, right? And I say it, and I make a joke. I'm like, I would prefer to run a race without runners than without a sports bra. And it gets a big laugh. 100%. But it's, you know, for me, like, I don't have particularly big breasts, but, you know, I need to invest in proper sports bras. And then I just tell them how much it is. And it's just conversation around the barriers, or, you know, talking about how to use tampons for the first time. And I'm like, oh, if it doesn't feel right, it's not right. You know, just take it out, start again. Watch some YouTube videos. You give them permission to access information that they need about a topic that they maybe wouldn't have thought is important. And then I just do like some really basic menstrual cycle awareness pieces with them to be like, it's okay you don't feel okay every day. You know, like for me, like, you know, it's okay to cry loads as a teenager, and especially before your period. And I'm like, you know, I ask the simple question, like, oh, who here has cried recently? And I stick up my own hand, and they're like, shocked. And I'm like, yeah, yeah, I was crying last night. You know what I mean? I'm like, on day, like, I don't know, 32, my, like, you know, whatever. And
it's, so these are workshops you're doing with girls in schools or community groups?
Both. Yeah.
Okay. Both. Yeah. 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 Yeah.
And it's just like the barriers that are there that are a lot to navigate as women, but especially when you're like 13.
I feel like I want to, like, just, you know, get my inner child and go to one of your workshops, Orna, because like a lot is landing for me personally as you're sharing, which is really interesting. So it's, if it's okay to, for me to quickly share what's going on in my head as I'm listening, because there's so much in what you're saying and it's such an important topic. And I think a lot of people who are listening, it'll really resonate with them as well. And, you know, the journey that they've had personally, or if they're moms, or if they know young girls. And there's so much grief in that as well, like around the lack of support and education, as you described, and knowledge. And like, I even wrote down the word ableism and privilege around, you know, like girls who do have period problems, and then obviously, as we know, the medical system isn't, that doesn't really support them with that, and then their opportunities are limited then in terms of athletics and sports because of that. And there isn't even help in, well, there is some help in the medical system, but it's very limited, and then there's no understanding in the sports world. So they're kind of then, no wonder, like you're saying, like, no wonder they're leaving sports early. And so what happened for me was similar to yourself. I was really, really into athletics, but I was younger. I was in primary school, and I, like, did all the community games, and you know, like, did all that, and I won a lot. I was a sprinter though. I was doing 100 meters, 200 meters in relays, and I was also very competitive, and I was really into it. And that was also my thing in my family, similar to you. And I was really, really good at it. And I got, like, I was just getting better, and I was winning a lot of races. And then I went to secondary school, and I wasn't a great hockey player because I wasn't great at the old team sport thing. But they then recognized me as a very good sprinter in the summer. And so they upgraded me kind of like to the next level of athletics. And I ran then a little bit with Dundrum Athletics Club for a while. But what happened then was I was around exactly that age, second or third year in secondary school, when I started to get this very painful pain, like an ache in my right hip. And like you, I was brought to like so many physios, osteopaths, chiropractors, like podiatrists. I got the insoles in my shoes and everything. And it got like really, really bad when I was doing sports and running, and also with hockey. And then I also had a lot of pressure to study. So it was a matter of like choosing, you know, studies over sport. And then I went to university, I went to Trinity College, and I tried to join the athletics club, but this pain kept coming back. And I even then went to get an MRI and several MRIs, and the surgeon, the consultant said to me, yeah, I know, like, we can see there's a lot of inflammation in your hip, but we don't know why it's there. Like, and that was, you know, 250 quid or whatever. And like, I never got an answer. And then I discovered, like you, like yoga, and I discovered something called fascial fitness and myofascial work and Pilates. What else? Like psoas release exercises and like hip strengthening. And I did, and I also went to an Amatsu therapist, which was really good, but it was never really fully gone. And to cut a very long story short, when I got my proper surgery for endometriosis, and I say that very bitterly through gritted teeth, because, you know, as people know, like, I've had two, my pain, I'm now 34, nearly 35, and my pain like went away after my endometriosis surgery. So I don't know why that is. I'm just like, my surgeon said that is because what I did know about that whole time was that when I started tracking my cycle, that pain was cyclical. And I was saying it to all the physios and the Imatsu therapists, I'd say to them, like, it's really, really sore premenstrually. Like, it really hurts then. It's worse then. And they just never really, like, not that they did anything like bad or malicious. They just didn't know. They had no idea. They listened to me. They're like, oh yeah, yeah, okay. It's, you know, they wrote it down in their notes, but they never really questioned it. I still have to look after it. I still have to do a lot of strength-based work and physio on my hip, but it's like the pain is minimal compared to what it was after I was treated for endometriosis. So there's my story.
There's your story. And that makes, but like, it's something like, it used to be 4%. Now it's only 6% of medical and sports science research. It's specifically done on women. So it's just like, what that means is like, it's not very well funded. There's not a lot of like opportunities to study it. So it means that there's not a lot of educational opportunities. So it doesn't trickle down. So that's what that stat actually means, is that our physios and our coaches and even our doctors, like, they don't have that much menstrual cycle education.
No.
So they just don't know.
Like, they have the hormonal endocrinology and then the pathology side. That's all.
They're not looking through that lens female physiology and of, as well, your lived experience of knowing that it comes up premenstrually. And
it's so, like, I'm actually sitting here getting angry and I feel sad now too. Although, because this is good sad, because I'm like realizing this. So, like, for people like me, selfishly, and also people who are listening, who are in that large group of people who are maybe a bit older now, or maybe there are young listeners. I don't think I have that many young listeners, but a lot of my listeners would have children. So, like, for someone like me, say, who had a really good relationship with sport, but then had to let it go for various reasons, menstrual included, or just, you know, studies, or all of the reasons you named, like, how do we then reclaim our relationship? Because that is a rebuilding of something. It's very difficult.
Yeah, and it is honestly such exciting work to be doing. It's pieces of work that actually, like, the benefits are quite like quick. Like, and the way I work it is like, I start by getting people like, I'm specifically talking about like reclaiming your relationship with physical activity and, you know, working with your cycle. But it's just like, what do you actually enjoy doing? You know, like, not what you should do, not like, you know, going to the gym. And I know some people actually enjoy going to the gym, but for me, like, that's not me. And when I was reclaiming my relationship after running, you know, trying to heal, it was less like, I thought surfing was really cool, you know, and I got a bit excited about it when I thought about me being a surfer. And again, so like, when I want, if women are, you know, thinking about, I suppose, stepping back into that world, it's just like, what gets you excited? And if it doesn't get you excited, do not do it. If you're dragging yourself there, don't. Like, there's enough hardship in life. This is play. This is like meant to be fun. You're meant to meet your friends. And yeah, okay, look, it's Ireland, you know, like, where a lot of the listeners are. There is going to be rainy evenings. Like, we know that. Like, we live in Ireland, you know. But it's just like, maybe it's a Zumba. Maybe it's a salsa class, you know, maybe it's aerial yoga, maybe it's pole dancing, you know, like, I guarantee you, I've not sat down with a woman, and when I actually ask her, like, what gets you excited? Like, there's always something, you know, maybe it's hiking, you know, maybe it's learning how to rollerblade. So genuinely, I had someone be like, oh, there's nothing I want to do. I was like, isn't it? I'm like, oh yeah, well, I want to rollerblade, but that's not a thing. It's a thing if you want it to be a thing. And then, like, once you go, you then meet other cool people doing it. And it's just like, because again, sometimes I think we think of it and like that it has to be team sport orientated. And like, again, the problem with team sports, and they can be really helpful, is like, they're at a set time. And like, I think especially if people have, you know, kids, like, sometimes like the times that you can do the thing is really it can change a lot. And that's why maybe like sometimes it's an online yoga class. Like, sometimes I just hang out with Adrian to this day. Like, sometimes I'm having a bit of an off day and I just like put on a 20 minute yoga with Adrian. And by the time I'm done, I do feel a hell of a lot better. So it's just like, start with something that feels fun.
Mm,
Yeah.
I love that's something to think about, folks. I'm going to think about that for myself. And I know like that is a really, really important point. And it might take a while for something to come to you. And yes. I think, like you say, it's the first step, isn't it? It's like getting to, for me, I know like I find it hard sometimes to go to new places. I get this weird like social anxiety, like mild yes. social anxiety. No, but yes. it is just like the first yes. time you go, knowing where to hang up your coat and the locker room or whatever it is, you know, all that stuff. So going there or bringing a friend and just putting it in your diary, maybe try it in your inner summer if you're feeling more confident then as well.
Yeah.
That's so... and you know,
do you know what? We do a little piece with the young girls and it's how to say hello first. And it's exactly that. That social anxiety of going. We need to name it. You are being brave by turning up to something where you don't know anyone. But by you doing that, you're allowing all your friends to also do that. So like that could be a counterculture, like going when you know no one. It's and it's almost harder as an adult because you're like, oh, I should have this figured out. You know,
I know.
This is the voice I have in my head, you know, and I will say that I learned to snowboard this because obviously the seasons are backwards here. So this your guys are summer, the winter here. And I just was so bad and was really awkward and really embarrassed when there's like literal like kids who can't walk who can navigate the snow, you know. And like, and I also work in this area, so I was just like really like, oh, I'm so bad. And for 2 weeks I was just horrific. Like it was cold, I was crap, I wasn't enjoying it, I was just hurting myself every day. And I was like, Orna, like, oh, and but I really wanted to learn how to do it. And I was just like, God, this is challenging. Like, this is hard. And I was like, yeah, but this is the gift. You know, I was like, what a privilege to learn something new as an adult. Like, this is brave, Orna. You know, and I self-talk myself a lot. I'm like, this is really brave. So anyone at any age, whether or not you're 12 and it's your first time turning up to go and swim in, or you're 37 and, you know, you're going to join like, a biking, like a couch to saddle, like they're really they're becoming more popular now, or you know, there's her sport week and there's like climbing or whatever, like just acknowledge that you're being brave, because there's so many people who wouldn't try, you know. And it's just like you doing it allows your sisters, allows your friends to also do it, you know. And I think that's something that I've learned as well, Lisa, from you, is just like you living and living your life bravely subconsciously gives us all permission to do the same. So it's not just you starting a new sport, you're also giving the women around you an opportunity to start something new too.
I love that. That's so powerful. Like I'm just taking away so much from this conversation. I really, really am. Like personally, like I'm not joking, because I think like sports and movement is definitely one of those things that I have to, well, I don't have to, but I want to get better at, like in terms of my relationship with it. It's kind of lower on the priority list, has been for many years. And I think at the root of it is this kind of trauma thing that I had, you know, from my past. And then thinking about all the lack of support and everything, you know, and I feel kind of angry about that. So what do you offer to people? What are the services you're offering? Because you've so much to give and you've so much change to make. And I'm really curious how people can work with you, etc.
Well, at the moment, it is specifically focused for young women. So, I mean, I will say to your listeners, like, I am someone who does spread myself quite thin. And at the moment, myself and Eve have decided to really focus on anyone between the ages of like 12 and 18 or a little bit younger. If there's, because I know like young girls are starting to get their periods quite young, but that's a real area of focus at the moment. Right. I have been approached loads, and friends and family, and also a lot of female friends. I do a lot of that type of work, but not professionally at the moment,
like informally. You're kind of coaching your friends. I love that. That's how businesses grow, right? You just start doing the work with your friends. That's how I did my work too.
So that will come, but at the moment we also do educational workshops for coaches and parents, I suppose, with the focus being on the young person, like on how to support young women. And we do a lot with, I suppose, with men, which is brilliant. And I love those workshops because they're just so freaked being there. They're so freaked and they're so freaked and they see me and I'm like, hello. And I tell them, I'm like, I'm on day 24. And they're just like, you can just see the blood drain from their face.
But I mean, it just goes to show how much they need it, right? Because that's like, you know, we need to move past that.
But they honestly are dying for educational opportunity.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, the cool thing is like, even sometimes when Niamh and I do our workshops and we often do them together, we always are learning stuff from each other. I'm like, oh, Niamh, you made a really nice point. Like, I was like, I forgot that, you know? And it's just like, again, we are training. I am training my own nervous system to hold space, because I mean, I have done so much work like by myself, kind of like on like underground. And now it's like bringing it up. It's like, I want to hold space for people who have wildly different experiences and supports than myself. And especially, you know, I'm very conscious of that, that some people have really poor relationships to physical activity because, you know, a coach could have shouted at them and there was no space, you know, and it, to be excited, you know, this is all, be excited about what's ahead. You know, there's so much opportunity there, and we have all these skills and tools, and it's only going to get easier. That is the cool thing. Like, there is more women reclaiming the space, even culturally. So even if you do nothing more than listen to this, give it 2 years and it will be a totally different thing anyway. You know, it's like the wave is coming, and anyone who's kind of, I suppose, stepping into this wave at this time, you are very much like an early adopter. It is like, it's not set up yet, but you will be paving the way and making it easier. You know, like, let's say you're that friend who opens up sport and physical activity for all your friends. You know, like, that's where you're at. And if you're not ready for that, just know that it's coming anyway. You know, so either way, if you're excited and you have some energy and you have a passion, like, there is something I'd like. And, you know, some people would like, maybe I'm just going to watch for another little while. And that's okay to watch and just like see how other people get on. You know, I do a lot of that. I do a lot of watching and seeing how people get on. I'm like, okay, I think it's safe to have a go. And it's, you know, it's okay to do that. And yeah, I'm just I'm excited for women. I'm excited for women. Like, it's like, yeah. And just because as well, I'm excited. I can now snowboard, Lisa. I'm a cool snowboarder.
I love this new information about you. It's so cool, because that would be like my biggest fear. I love skiing, actually. I've been skiing several times. And the freedom, have you been skiing, Orna?
No, only snowboarding.
I love that you've only been snowboarding. Typical. Because it feels like you're like, I like to have my feet free from each other, you know, yeah. Like to have them. Yeah. But the snowboarding looks, when you're going skiing, like when I saw the snowboarders up on the slopes, oh my God, it looks so like they actually make it look really easy. But I'd say it's hard. Yeah. I'd say it's really cool. Hard with the balance.
They're cool, Lisa. They're cool. Really, and now cool. I'm cool.
Yeah, we're both cool. No, I did love skiing, but it is, I had a couple of bad falls. Do you know what sport I did when I, so I, I was born in the Netherlands, as you know, and then yeah. I lived here, or moved here when I was 4, but we moved back when I was 10. We lived there for a year. And I took up figure skating, and I was really good at it. Yeah, I was really good at it because I'd done gymnastics here, and I was a good athlete as well. And then we moved back to Ireland, and I think I still have unprocessed grief from that, because I had to give it up because there was no ice rink in Ireland at the time. Yeah. I don't think there is actually a permanent rink except for up in Belfast, and they only have those temporary ones at Christmas, like in Dublin, you know, where it's just like crowds of people on the ice rink. There's no, but there is rollerblading and roller skating, like domes in Dublin that you can go to that I've been to. But yeah, like ice skating, I loved that. But I really feel really sad that those amenities aren't as available in every country, you know? So that's another thing you have to think about, is like what amenities are available locally in your community.
Yeah, but I think you're onto it. I think you, like, even you articulating that experience, you're like re-remembering, and I guarantee you that will like women listening to this will be like, oh, there's actually something.
Yeah, you know? Some woman in Canada will be like, oh yeah, there's an ice rink down the road. No, that's my ice rink.
But again, it's just like, you can recreate that in so many different ways. It's the same way I was told I couldn't ever run again. You know, and now I can run, and like, I'm sure you'll be able to ice skate, and I'm sure now it's coming into winter and those temporary ones are coming off, and Lisa's going to be booking her appointment left, right and center.
Maybe I should go to the 7-Up on ice. I'll just be booking it every week, like, and going showing up there. Yeah, no, it is. It like, it's so fun. I think I like sports where there's a sense of freedom, like the skiing, sprinting and ice skating. I did always feel quite restricted in team sports. I also really like tennis as well. That's fun.
Yeah.
You know. But again, the culture is very much like, oh, you're doing it wrong and competitive and, you know, like,
but like, again,
oh, table tennis, all the ideas are coming
in. Sorry, that's just like five sports that you've just mentioned to me. And honestly, everyone at home who you're listening, get your pen and paper and start writing them. Because once you think of one, they're going to keep popping up. And you can text me later, Lisa, and be like, okay, I've updated my list. There's now 12.
Yeah. Okay, so here's another question for you, which I need help with. When you go to a class or something new, like I went to a roller skating class, which was very different to ice skating. And I also went to a dance class called bachata, which is, I think it's South American. Yeah, it's like a kind of form of salsa. It's not salsa. I need to be culturally correct here. It's not. It's South American dance. But like, I felt like I had two left feet in both accounts. And it's really, I find it really hard, like being someone who was good at these things when I was younger and then showing up now as an adult, like it's, you know, I felt like I didn't go back to the bachata class. I feel kind of ashamed saying that, but I didn't because I just didn't enjoy it because I was terrible at it. It wasn't fun. Yeah. So how can you like overcome all that stuff?
I'm going to take a big deep breath. I want you to put your hand on your heart as well, Lisa, and take a big deep breath.
Doing it. Hands are on hearts here. Everyone else join us.
Take a long exhale out and take a deep inhale and a long exhale out. I just want you to thank yourself for being brave enough for going.
Aww.
You know?
I'm going to cry.
Seriously. But hey, how cool is it that you went? And I think these are the spaces that we need as women. To be like, oh my God, it's so hard sometimes, you know? It's like, oh, you were brave enough to go and you're like, oh, I didn't enjoy it. I had no friends. I had two left feet. And in the most beautiful of loving and of caring ways, you know, I'm going to be like, of course it was hard. And of course you're able for it. But it's just like sometimes when we have it, and I'm only articulating this because I know this, like I know this voice so well. And it's like, you should be able, you know, and there's a little bit of a cutting edge. It's like, you should be able for this, Warna. You know, you know, and I had that voice not that long ago, like literally 2 months ago when I was learning to snowboard. And I like was quite snippy with myself. And I was like, Warna, you're doing so good. You're really trying. You came, you turned up, and it's so challenging. And like, there's a few different ways you can approach it. It's like, it's never easy starting something new. And that is the mountain to be climbed. But that's the learning. That's the growth. And it's just like when we stop growing, we can kind of become stuck. I'm going to say stuck. Yeah. Do you know? And it's just like, it's okay to come home with your tail in between your legs. And be like, oh, yuck. But what I want and what I'm going to be here and what I encourage women to do is to share that experience, because I resonate, and I guarantee you, thank you for sharing, because every other woman is resonating about that time they went to that adult swimming class or that like run.
Oh, route. I did those too. Yeah. Couldn't put my face in the water. Yeah.
Yeah. You're the last person there. And you're just like, oh, this is hard and this is not fun. Mm. But the cool thing is when you feel ready, it's to go back and to go back. And to keep turning up. And like, there is no way you won't get better as time goes on. But this is the place where we're to support each other. This is where women really thrive, you know? So you get your girls around you and you tell them your experience. And I had to ring home. I was like, oh my God, I really don't like snowboarding. And they're like, ah, yeah, you'll be grand. Keep going, Orna. You'll be grand. I was like, all right, okay. And then I was in the pub 2 days later. And there was this other random girl there and I didn't even know her. And we got chatting. We were both new to snowboarding. I was like, oh my God, I hate it. She was like, oh my God, I had a panic attack on the mountain because I got so overwhelmed by how much I was in pain. And then I was like, ah, so then I started to break the day down. Like I'd start the day with a lovely coffee, you know, get me going. Mm-hmm. And then at midday, I'd get a hot whiskey. Yeah, delicious. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I'd break it down and I'd also reward myself for how challenging it was. But the cool thing is that when it clicks, that sense of satisfaction, that sense of confidence, that sense of achievement that you get is yours. And it's, you know, and it will fuel every, but I'm not belittling that feeling. I'm just normalizing it. And I think if we can share it, we'll feel that that experience is very resonant with other women and other people, actually, anyone starting something new. And it's to be like, you know, even if you were to go back and you were to look around, I bet you there might be someone else new. And if you were to sidle up to them, you know, and say hello first, because obviously someone has to be brave, and you've been brave by coming, so you might as well be brave by saying hello, being like, oh my God, how hard is this? They're going to be like, oh my God, I don't know what I'm doing, you know, because there are, but we're so concentrated on and internalized and being like, oh, this is so hard for me. And if it was a beginner class, I guarantee you. And it was the class in Ireland.
Yeah, they're all in Ireland. Yeah.
Yeah.
Not
yeah,
the
yeah,
scheme,
yeah.
But yeah.
Oh my God, yeah. No one in Ireland's a natural dancer.
Well, a lot of them were, because there's a lot of people from South America and Dublin. So there were a lot of those people there,
which was fine.
Like, obviously, yeah, there were really good dancers. But there was also, you know, people who weren't experienced dancers there. There was a mixed bag, which was great, because you can kind of look at other people and the teacher and then not feel alone in your
And then there is the other end of the scale. And you might be here as well, that like, if you don't like the teacher, do not go back either. You know, it's like when people go to a yoga class and obviously they're like, Orna, you really like yoga, right? And they come up to me, they're like, Orna, you like yoga, right? I went to yoga and I hated it. I'm like, did you like the teacher? They're like, no. And I was like, oh, well, there you go. You know, it's just like, shop around for a vibe or a person that you like. No, it's like, it's not like, sometimes it clicks first day. Often it might be day two or week three, but you will get a sense of whether or not you think it's a nice environment to go into.
Yeah, it's kind of like dating. You need to kind of, you know, give yourself some time before you commit. I love this, Orna. That's really inspired me so much to think about it. Because if you think about it, like, it's really, really a lot of pressure and an unrealistic expectation to put on myself to be really good at roller skating. Because I'd never been on the four wheel. You know, I was used to rollerblading as a kid and ice skating, but they're very different. It's a very different balancing act on roller skates to roller blades, I think. And then, you know, the technique is very different and stopping and all that is very different. So it's just mad that what we do to ourselves, isn't it, as adults, to put all this pressure on ourselves. So that's very refreshing and very healing for me personally. And I'm sure for listeners as well, to really think about that, like, oh yeah, like, celebrate going, like, acknowledge that it's brave. Don't put so much pressure on yourself and pick something that you might not enjoy now, but you enjoy the idea of doing it, and then learning along, and then just just keep going, as you say, keep showing up.
My sister took up, I have a sister who lives in Vancouver, and she took up like diving, like from high things into the pool.
Oh my God.
And I was just like, that is cool. And she was like, I just did it because it looked a bit cool, you know. So like, even if you don't, if there's nothing that jumps to mind, it's like, what do you think is a cool thing? And if you look it up online, like, there's always beginner courses. Like, there is. And it's even something like, what kind of get you? You'd be like, ooh, that would be a cool thing to try. And it was just like high ledge diving. I was like, so
that is a really cool sport to watch. It's a really cool sport to watch at the Olympics. I really like watching the diving. Like, I think I'd be too scared to do that. But like, if you fancy it, then like, It's just there's so many thoughts going around in my head now around sports and what to do. I'm going to like look into what's actually available in Ireland these days, because I haven't really, I'm not like up to date with that. You know, I do know actually, I'm originally from a place called Delgany, which is the next village up from Greystones, which is in Wicklow in Ireland. And it's probably there about 10 years now, but they have a running track, like a proper running track there now, which wasn't there when I was younger. We used to run in like car parks and stuff, you know, and fields and the running track. It's very exciting.
There's like, there is a growing body. And I guess because I don't know, I forget that, like, because obviously this is my work, I hear about a lot of things, but like your local sports partnership often have intro classes, like 4 to 6 weeks intro to surfing or to like biking. For different groups, like, I know there's a good few mums and me's. My auntie, what a cool lady, she's in her 50s, and she, what is it, Mothers and Others, started some Gaelic football that she never played before and just loves it. And she said, like, oh, it's just so much fun and just a bit of crack, you know, and like no pressure. And so that was local, and she just obviously met loads of other cool women who were also a bit nervy about being there. And then I think it's already happened, but every week they have Sport Ireland have a week called her week or something, where there's like loads of intro courses to different random things like badminton and orienteering and like mountain biking and stuff. And it's just like, who's the lead there is Nora Stapleton. She's doing amazing work in like making all these sports that were once niche, like intro level, you know, because it's just like, not all of us have someone who know, like, and that's the way it used to be. That's how you used to get into sports, if you know someone who is involved. But now most places have beginner courses. So I would say, you know, that's what Google's for. And thank God for technology. It's like, it has opened up. And like, you know, follow them on Instagram, stalk their stories for a while, see if it looks like fun, send an Instagram message. You know, like, this is how I would have started up a lot of different courses, or like reach out to someone, or if someone you know does something. I know people have reached out to me and be like, how do I get going? I'm like, oh, it's actually on Tuesday at this time. Do you want to meet up and we can go together? You know, like, women are actually amazing for that, because they know.
Yeah,
like,
it's true. Yeah, it's so true. To go together, bring a friend, bring a few friends, you meet friends of friends, you know, like, oh my God, Orna, this is so, I'm having like all of these light bulb moments right now. And I'm like, probably going to be processing tonight and tomorrow. But like, what I'm personally really taking away from this conversation, and I encourage listeners to think about your personal takeaways, is for me is that, like, I'm like you, like, I do like, I wouldn't say I'm massively productive, but I am productive in my own way. And I am quite achievement oriented. I always have been. And I'd be competitive and creative. But I get to do all that in my work now. And it doesn't need to be also in my sport life, you know? Like, I'd much rather have like a fun Orna's like dancing around and right now as I'm saying this. Like, I'd much rather have a fun, nourishing relationship where I can like switch off. And I do other, like, one of the things I do to switch off from work is I watch just crappy things on TV, which a lot of people do, which I love. There's some stuff on Netflix I really enjoy watching. Yeah. But like, it's nice. But sometimes those series end and then you're like, well, what now? Do you know? And then you wait for the next thing, or you wait for the next season of The Crown or whatever, which is due, I think, in a few days. And which isn't crappy, by the way, just a side note, that's definitely not a crappy one. But like, I need probably something a bit more consistent weekly, you know, weekly or even bi-weekly, and something that I can leave the house for. So that, this is really, really inspiring me now to go and think about, maybe I'll make a vision board. God, I'm getting really creative with this.
And just so you know, right, this is not just you. We were all conditioned to think that sports had to be competitive.
Yeah.
And back in the day, there was no space for women to just like love sports and to just for just for pure enjoyment and fun's sake. So I will say, just like on that note, just like be really gentle with yourself, because this was a way we were conditioned. And now it's like a reclaiming of that space.
Reclaiming. Yeah. And that makes sense that we were conditioned in that way, because we entered sport in order to be equal to men, really. We were kind of fighting for the rights to, and we still are on the competitive levels, you know, to be on that sort of equal sort of recognition playing field, if you will. Yeah. But like you say, there has never been culturally, except for young children, like this focus of it being fun and enjoyable and pleasurable and relaxing and social. So I obviously know the reasons, because of, you know, the socio-cultural stuff that I'm always harping on about on this podcast as well. Like, it's so in us all. It's literally internalized in us.
And that's why it's hard. And that's why it's hard. That's why it's hard to turn up and be brave. And that makes sense. And it's just so people have an understanding of where that came from, that it didn't come from inside. It came from outside. And that's why it's hard to turn up and be pretty shit at something. But that is an act of rebellion. And that is an act of like radical activism in its like most anti-cultural, anti-cultural celebration way.
Yeah. It's an act of feminism. It's an act of activism. And it's all like, then reclaiming sport is a tool for healing as well on that level, isn't it?
Numbers.
Oh my God, I just love it's just so good. I can't wait to have you back already.
And there's so many bits that I was just like, oh, I could go off on this, but it would be like I'd come back in 20 minutes. So I was like, oh, we'll have to.
No, this has been a really, really good conversation. And I actually haven't done a podcast this long, but I was just like, feck it. Like, this is good. No, don't apologize. We're taking up space. We're talking about all the important stuff here. This matters. There's podcasts. Richard, my boyfriend, gave me an episode, or he forwarded me on an episode of a Joe Rogan podcast. I don't listen to Joe Rogan, but I'm sure you're familiar with him. But I was just scrolling through his podcasting. And some of his episodes are like 4.5 hours long. He's no problem taking up space on his podcast. I'm like, I can do an hour and a half. No problem. We can. Anyway, Orna.
4.5 hours though for a podcast. Insanity.
Well, Joe Rogan does apparently. Yes. Yeah. It's so Jesus. Funny because I was giving myself a hard time for being for talking for more than 45 minutes, but you just had so much to offer us. Like, Orna, you really, like, you offered us so much wisdom, so much insight, so much food for thought, so much just content for healing. Like, this is really, really powerful stuff, and I'm so grateful for your time and for your expertise that, like, comes from your lived experience, from your training, from your studies, you know, from the work you're doing as an entrepreneur. It's so like valuable. It really, really is. And I'm so, so grateful. Can't like tell you how grateful I am. So thank you.
And thank you, Lisa, because honestly, meeting you has been such an important part of my work. And I'm definitely a more integrated person because of it. So thank you.
Oh, you're so welcome. It's so good. Anyway, where can people find you in this wonderful work you're doing and growing?
So to be fair, we're not great at the old social medias, but we do have one that's just moved to v.ie. And then anyone is more than welcome to reach out to me personally. Or my email address is ornamarie1@gmail.com. And we have also an info one. So the move to be stuff is very much focused on our young and up and coming women coming up behind us. So that I think is just info@movetobe.ie. And we are good for responding to emails. The Instagram has got a bit on the long finger.
No problem. I think people will get that. And do you have a website? Is it movetobe.ie is your website?
Yeah, movetobe.ie.
I'll put it in the show notes. I'll put all that in the show notes. But for anyone who's driving and listening in the car, M-O-V-E.
The letter two.
The number two. And sorry, then the B. Is it B?
Just the letter B. Yeah. We thought we were trying
the
to
letter B.
Want to be cool and down with the kids.
It is cool. Okay. Move to be. Yeah, I love it. I love the name because it's about being whole as a woman, and your niche with that is movement, which is really powerful.
I'm so glad you get it. Thank God.
So good. Oh, anyway, thank you, Orna, and have a lovely rest of your day. It's morning for you now. Yes, evening for you. Me here in Dublin. It's been so good talking to you, and I'm really excited to have you back on. And thank you as well for the encouragement. I know you're one of my number one fans of the podcast, and that's been really, really helpful to me. So yeah, talk
magical
to you soon.
Things happen when women support women. So yeah,
it's true. Yeah. Thank you, Orna. Thank you. I'll put all her links in the show notes. And thank you everyone for listening and staying with us. And that's it. I will see you next week. Thank you for joining today's conversation. This community, these topics, and the stories I share are not possible without all of you being part of the journey. If you are interested in getting more support for your own personal process, head on over to my website, lisadeyoungcoaching.com, to book a consultation call with me. Or you can sign up for a free course there as well. And as always, please like, subscribe, and share this podcast with your friends. Lots of love for the week, and see you next time.